Hi, I'm Josh and welcome to the Wild Nature Photography Podcast, the podcast that talks the art and craft and the jet lag of nature photography. It is the 28th of October, 2023, and this is podcast number 83. And it's 5 a.m. here in Melbourne, Australia, and I've been up for about an hour now with jet lag. I had actually tried to record this very long overdue podcast a few days ago, actually the day after I got back home from Sweden, but I was so foggy with jet lag, I just couldn't get my thoughts straight. So I decided to put it aside for a couple more days. I was already long overdue. And just on that, I guess I just want to take a moment and, apologize for the long delay between podcasts. You know, I was guiding trips in Finland. I had two trips in Finland, then I was guiding a trip in Greenland and then in Iceland, and, best intentions to try and do more podcasting from the road, but just running out of time and being very, very busy during my travels. So catching up now, there's quite a lot I want to go over today in terms of news items and also the topic of the day, which is going to be what happens when serendipity meets technology. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. Let's just go through the news items so that we can get back up to speed, because there's been a few interesting things going on. And I think the best place to kick this off is perhaps with a couple of new lenses from Canon, the first of which has been officially announced, which is the new Canon RF 10 to 20 millimeter lens. Now, this is the RF version of the original EF 11 to 24 millimeter lens. And I owned that lens, the original 11 to 24 millimeter. It was big. It was, actually it wasn't that big, but it was heavy and it was expensive. And it had a very large front element, which means you couldn't use filters with it. Not without carrying very, very large filters anyway. And it was a lens that I struggled with a lot. I found that very, very rarely, perhaps one in 100, did I actually find that where I photographed an image at, 11 or 12 millimeters that I actually ended up liking that photograph. It was just too wide most of the time for me. And I think that's going to be the case with the 10 to 20 as well. There are just very few circumstances in nature where you need to go that wide. And generally, I find that most of the time between 14 and 35 is a great range. So Canon's 14 to 35 millimeter F4 suits me very, very well. It's small, it's light, it's relatively inexpensive in the grand scheme of things, and it's a fantastic lens. So I'm not sure what role this new 10 to 20 millimeter lens will actually play in nature photography. Or I can think of certain situations where it can be useful. Sometimes when you're on Zodiac and you're photographing icebergs very, very close, and it's difficult for the Zodiac to get farther away, a very, very wide lens like this can be helpful. But other than that, it's going to be a lot of drama with this lens. It's going to be placed by photographers down low on the ground, wide open at 10 millimeter to try and get as much drama into the image as you possibly can. But the problem with using lenses like this that are this wide is you end up throwing the mountains, if there are mountains in the background, so far out in the distance, they're going to appear tiny, literally as dots on the horizon. So I find the use for this lens very limited. I think it's obviously going to have a place in architectural and in indoor photography. There'll be plenty of photographers that are doing real estate that'll find this lens very useful. But I think for me, it's probably going to be a pass. I am going to test one when I can get my hands on it. Canon are telling me that should happen before I leave for Antarctica on the 6th of December. So I'm actually back in Australia now for a little bit over a month. So if that lens does come in, I will take the opportunity to test it. Probably not going to purchase it though. The other lens that's rumored to be announced is the new 200 to 800 millimeter lens. Now, this is quite slow. I believe it's going to be something around f8.5, f9 at the long end. And it's going to be quite an inexpensive lens. I don't think it's going to be an old series lens. We'll know in the next few days. I think it's fantastic that Canon are producing these long telephoto lenses that are inexpensive, because not everybody out there can afford to go and drop $16,000 on a 600mm f4. I am hoping that we might see a high-end version of a lens like this, though, in an L series. Something like a 200 to 800 is a fantastic lens for wildlife. Obviously, f9 is a little bit slow, but it would be nice to see something faster down the line. So we'll watch this space in relation to the 200 to 800 millimeter lens and just see what comes when it's actually officially announced. I think that's going to be quite an interesting lens. Okay, there was another big update from Adobe in relation to Lightroom, which has got a number of new features in it. The first one of which is something I've been asking for since we first got the new masking tools in Lightroom, and that is point color. So that is the ability to adjust HSL inside an individual mask. And that's very, very exciting. It's a very, very powerful addition. Something I'm really, really pleased to see in the latest version of Lightroom. As I said, I've been asking my friend Eric at Adobe for it for some time now, and I was just really thrilled to see it in the latest version. Also included in the latest version of Lightroom, pardon me, is HDR feature. Now, I've done a blog post on this, and I'll try and put a link to that in the show notes as well. But in short, this is not the traditional HDR method of stacking photographs. This is to do with taking advantage of the extended dynamic range of displays such as those made by Apple, Apple's XDR displays, and there are several others on the market as well. Basically, that allows you to have a much more extended dynamic range in the highlights of your photograph. And it's going to be interesting to see how the market takes this. It's going to cause a lot of confusion in the marketplace. The term HDR means different things to different people already. Throw this into the mix as well, and I think it's going to cause probably fairly significant confusion. I think for now, anyway, there's very few reasons to adopt this as a, if you like, as an ongoing concern, just because so few people out there actually have HDR displays that can actually take advantage of this new technology. Then there's the whole question of what happens when you put an image that's processed for an XDR or HDR display on the web. What does the person at the other end see? Well, that depends on their display. So now, instead of just worrying about what color gamut we might be using and what color gamut the other person at the other side of the world who's looking at the photograph might be using and whether their monitor's been calibrated or not, this adds the complication that now we need to think about whether that monitor is XDR, HDR capable as well. So there's quite a lot of confusion in the marketplace around this already, especially on the internet photography forums. I've done a short explanatory blog post on this. As I said, I will try and link to that in the show notes if I remember, just because I think it's worth taking the time to talk about this new technology. Eric Chan over at Adobe has also done a very, very good blog post on this with examples, and I have also linked to that in my blog post as well. Importantly, unless you own a HDR or an XDR display, you're not going to be able to see the examples. So that's part of the problem with this new tech. But nevertheless, I think it's very, very interesting. But the big thing in Lightroom for me is point color. This ability to have HSL control, so individual control of color, hue, saturation, and luminance inside a given mask is incredibly powerful. And the way Adobe has implemented it is fantastic with the eyedropper tool so that you can click on an area and you can select the exact color of that area and adjust just that color. So really, really pleased to see that. A couple of other things. There were two books waiting for me on my desk when I got back to Australia. One was Scott Portelli's book on Antarctica. Now, if you don't know of Scott Portelli, he's an Australian photographer. Primarily, he does underwater work. He does do some terrestrial work as well, but primarily underwater. He's one of Australia's leading underwater photographers, in my view. He announced some months ago that he was doing this book on Antarctica. I immediately pre-ordered it. It's landed on my desk. I have not even had a chance to open it as yet, but I will do so in the coming days, and I'll sit down and I'll go through it, and I'll try and do a podcast book review on Scott Portelli's book on Antarctica as well. And the other book that landed on my desk is the 8th edition of the Bird Photographer of the Year competition. This is a competition I did very, very well in this year. It was the first time I'd ever entered it. I've talked about this, I think, in previous podcasts. I had a number of images that made the finals. I ended up with 3 images in the final book. All 3 were commended. I actually did a blog post on that just recently, and I'll also try and put a link to that in the show notes as well. But the book has arrived. It looks fantastic. I've had a preliminary look through it. It's of the same standard and quality as the other 7 editions. It's a little bit slimmer. But it's certainly of a very, very good quality. And I'll also be doing a follow-up book review on that book as well. I just want to spend a bit more time absorbing the photographs and, making some notes and comments on my thoughts on the overall book. But if you haven't, looked at these books before, the Bird Photographer of the Year books, I highly encourage you to go and do so, even if you only have a passing interest in birds, because there's so much inspiration to be taken from these books. And just by way of a small example, I actually had someone ask me, what do you mean by inspiration? Well, a perfect example is there's an image of a razor bill in the new book. Fantastic image of a silhouette of a razor bill. It's actually given me inspiration and an idea of how I want to go and photograph razor bills when I go to Grimsey Island in 2025. So that's what I mean when I talk about inspiration. And you can look at the photographs, you can see the metadata, and you can read the caption and see how it was taken, where it was taken, what techniques were used by the photographer. I really, really like these books. I think I said as much when I did my podcast review of these. But anyway, looking forward to reviewing that new book. Another news item is I'll be doing a webinar for BenQ on the 8th of November this year. That'll be an online webinar. It'll be free. Again, I'll link to this in the show notes. I actually did a blog post about it a couple of days ago. And the purpose of this webinar, it will be a presentation on my own workflow in Adobe Lightroom, but it's going to be a deep dive. So we're going to go right under the hood of the sliders. I'm going to talk about what many of these sliders are actually doing, when you should use them, when you should not use them, what's a good reason to use some of them, and what's a good reason not to use some of them. We'll look at the new point color facility in Lightroom. I'll talk a little bit about the new HDR facility in Lightroom as well. I probably won't demonstrate that simply because of the issue with not everybody having HDR, XDR monitors. But anyway, the webinar itself is free. You can register. There's a link in my blog post. And again, I'll link to this in the show notes. For those of you who want to attend, you just need to register your attendance. Okay, I think we're just about there with news items. I am on the run-up, just in terms of travel, I am on the run-up now to Antarctica. As I said, I'll be leaving on the 6th of December, so that's in a little over a month from now, which means it's time to be getting the office work done, all the paperwork that goes with goes along with organizing an expedition down to Antarctica. This will be my last trip of the season, of the year, for 2023, and I'm very, very much looking forward to returning to Antarctica. Of course, I'll do a blog post on packing for this trip, what I'm going to take with me and why, and I'm actually, after Antarctica, I'm actually going to Easter Island to do a scouting trip for the statues there. Somewhere I've always wanted to go. I had full intentions of actually trying to go there way back in 2010 with my friend Martin when we came back from Antarctica, but just couldn't make it work. So this time I am going down to Easter Island at the end of Antarctica and very much looking forward to that as well. So let's come to the topic of the day, which is serendipity versus tech, not versus, sorry, serendipity. What happens when serendipity meets technology? And what do I mean by that? So I had a really interesting experience when I was in Finland guiding the second part of my Finland workshop, the extension up north, which is primarily for birds. It was primarily for golden eagles and eagle owl, but there are also many fantastic small birds up there. And we'd gone into one of the hides to photograph eagle owl at nighttime. Now, eagle owls are nocturnal, so they tend to they do come at night. So this was a set-up situation shooting from a hide with a pre-staged area to photograph the eagle. And as we were sitting in the hide, it was very, very dark, almost complete darkness. I would say you could barely see 10 to sort of 15 feet into the gloom at best. It was really very, very dark. And I was sitting in the hide with a 600mm lens on the Canon EOS R3, and just in the gloom, there was a bird that came down and landed on a branch, and I could barely see it. You could literally just see the outline shadow silhouette of the bird. You couldn't tell what sort of bird it was, just that it was a fairly small owl-shaped bird. I saw it. I immediately turned the camera towards it to try and photograph it. What was absolutely astounding was that in the complete darkness, and it was pretty much complete darkness, the Canon EOS R3 was able to not only focus on the bird, but it was able to find the eye of the bird as well and lock onto the eye of the bird. Now, it happened to be a European pygmy owl, and I'll post an image of the final photograph along with this when I post the update to my blog for the podcast, but just so you can have a look at it. But what was really incredible was that the owl only stayed a few moments, but light levels were incredibly low. I was at ISO 12,800, f4, wide open on the 600mm at 1/20th of a second, handheld. And the combination of the IBIS inside the EOS R3 working with the image stabilization in the lens, I was able to hand hold at 1/20th of a second a 600 millimeter lens in total darkness and get a pin sharp image of this bird. The EOS R3's ability to focus in virtually complete darkness down to, I think it's -7 EV, is just absolutely phenomenal. And what does that mean? Well, it means that we can now capture photographs that were literally not possible perhaps a generation of cameras ago. So, and the reason for that is the combination of IBIS working with the image stabilization and the incredible ability of these cameras to focus in near total darkness, and not just focus, but actually to grab hold of the eye of the bird and not let go. Absolutely phenomenal. And this sort of situation, obviously there's a lot of luck to this, or serendipity, with sitting in the hide waiting for the owl to come. And actually the owl I was waiting for was the eagle owl. I wasn't actually even waiting for pygmy owl. That was a complete surprise. But when something like this happens nowadays with these modern cameras, it would have just been impossible a generation of cameras ago. So we are now going to open up a world of possibilities for shooting in near total darkness and creating photographs that were just impossible a generation of cameras ago. So of course, as I said, there's an element of luck to this and serendipity. You know, it was very fortunate the pygmy owl came down. It was also very fortunate that Susie sitting next to me saw it, because I actually didn't see it myself until she pointed out, and she said, well, what's that sitting on the branch over there? This small silhouette that was basically imperceptible in the darkness. So I'm very excited by this new possibility of what happens when serendipity meets technology, because we now have the technology to capture photographs that were just impossible. And when a bit of luck goes our way and we have a situation like this where an animal or bird, whatever it might be, presents itself in near total darkness, we can still photograph it now. And with the noise reduction available to us these days that comes in the latest version of Lightroom again, or whether you're using something like Topaz Denoise, you can shoot at incredibly high ISOs, even well above 12,800, and still get fantastic clean images once they've been through post-production. Of course, once you get above about 12,800, you do start to lose a bit of fine detail, but nevertheless, photographs are possible at those high ISOs now. It simply were not just a generation of cameras ago. So I'm very, very excited by this new new possibilities, I guess, that this opens up. This was the first time I've had this situation occur for me, in nature, while I've been shooting the EOS R3, where I've been shooting in just, what is it, I said, almost total darkness, and being able to capture sharp, clean images that are, certainly portfolio grade. There's no question about that. So it's a very exciting time to be a photographer, to be a nature photographer, whether you're shooting from hides or not, or whether you're shooting from a safari vehicle in Africa or a Zodiac in Antarctica, it doesn't really matter. But that ability to stay out when you would have perhaps otherwise packed up because the light levels had gotten too low is very, very exciting. And the abilities that that's going to give us to photograph animals that were nocturnal, that were previously basically impossible to photograph. So it's a very exciting time to be photographing. I think this is one of those aspects to the new mirrorless technology that just makes it a no-brainer to upgrade to these days. You know, I've talked before about things like focus points right out to the edges, eye tracking, stacked sensors for blackout free shooting, all great benefits for nature photographers. But I think also now we can add to that list this ability to shoot in near total darkness and get clean images as well. So I was quite staggered when I looked at the photographs on my computer of this owl that they were all so sharp when they were shot at just 1/20th of a second handheld. That was just, it still does my head in. I think it's really phenomenal and incredible. So we'll see how that, many other opportunities we might get for that going forward. I'm hopeful now that it'll mean extended hours for photographing. I won't have to leave the hide anymore when it starts to get dark, or when light levels might have otherwise been too low. We can now continue to work. Now, of course, a lot depends on the subject too. So in this case of the pygmy owl, the European pygmy owl that I had photographed, it was stationary on this branch, so I could shoot at 1/20th of a second. If you've got a wolf or something like that that's moving in near total darkness, that's a different story. And obviously then you're going to have to be shooting a panned image and it won't be as sharp, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I think that's it for today. I just want to apologise again for the long delay between podcasts. Best intentions to try and do more while I was travelling. Just impossible with everything that I had on the go, but excited to be back in Australia now. I think I've covered off most of what I wanted to in this podcast. No doubt there'll be a few items I've probably missed, but we'll catch up with those in future podcasts. I will get into both of those book reviews, Scott Bortelli's book on Antarctica and the 8th edition of Bird Photographer of the Year, because I'm keen to spend a bit of time with both of those books. And actually, speaking of books, just before we do wrap up, Vincent Meunier, the French wildlife photographer, he has announced his new book. It's a retrospective of his work. It's simply titled Meunier. I immediately pre-ordered it as soon as I saw that it was announced, and I'm looking forward to that arriving. I'm hopeful that will arrive before Christmas as well, and I can review that too. So some interesting books that are around at the moment, and as always, exciting time to be a photographer. So we'll wrap it up there for today. I'm Josh. It has been the 28th of October, 2023, podcast number 83. Look forward to seeing you out in the field. Take care.